Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Ronsley, and today we have the legend that is Dan Martell in the house. I've known Dan for a while, and he's got this amazing book, How to Buy Back Your Time. It is easily one of the most important entrepreneurial books you got to read. He talks about business, entrepreneurship, and how to make it all work. Enjoy this episode.
You can't find your voice if you don't use it. This is We Are Podcast, formerly called Should I Start a Podcast? A podcast for podcasters who want a podcast that grows their business and brand. How many times can we say podcast in a sentence? Here's your host, Ronsley. He has interviewed more than 1,500 people, has been listened to over 5 million times in 133 countries. He has helped create over 1,100 podcasts for businesses, brands, and personalities. He's been doing this for more than a decade. Get ready to take notes. Enjoy the show.
Thank you for making the time. It's just amazing to get you in the calendar. I know how busy you are and I know how precious your time is. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for even considering doing this. It's amazing to have this book, to read this book. This is my fourth iteration of this book. How are you?
I'm doing amazing. I mean, Ronsley, like, dude, we've been friends for a really long time. Everything you've done has always been top shelf. I'm just grateful for our friendship, man. I'm here to give you 110%. I want your audience to walk away going like, damn. That was awesome. So you, I prepped. You I'm ready. Do. I'm here for you.
Do you always deliver, whether it's a podcast or you speaking, you just over deliver. So let's talk about this whole process of writing the book and getting to Wall Street Journal bestselling list. What's that been like for you and how has that changed anything in your entrepreneurial way of looking at things?
Dude, everybody says it. You know, your book is the ultimate business card. I mean, we all know the same people that have books that teach people how to write books. You know, pretty much I've got bookshelves in my house, like a library, just friends of mine that have authored books, which is super cool considering when I started reading, you know, I was nerding out on, you know, emailing the author and getting a reply. Since the book's come out, it absolutely transformed my lens on media as the primary business I'm in completely. Like January, my book came out, became a Wall Street Journal bestseller, as you mentioned. But then just the demand of people that are now, okay, you're now an authority on this topic. Well, I was before, I just didn't have a book. So it's been really interesting for me to see the correlation between content and perceived authority. And then like I'm getting invited to keynote events where they're paying my fees, buying 500 copies of my book, and like I would pay to be in the audience of these events. And that's just transformed everything. So even now being able to say yes to more like in-person masterminds or in-person podcasts, you know, I would say the book surprised me by 10x. Like it was way bigger and it continues to continue to grow. Every week we sell 1,000+ copies and every week it keeps growing. It's really resonating with entrepreneurs that want to build companies they don't grow to hate.
Well, it's a beautiful principle, right? Everyone keeps talking about how you've got to scale your company, grow your company, and you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And with your thesis on the book, it's quite simple. It's just like, just buy back your time. And it becomes so easy to repeat. It becomes so easy to look for growth. It becomes so easy to look for team. And with your camcorder method, it just becomes so easy to train them as well. Let's talk about the principle of buying back your time. I'd love for you to start with those three things that, you know, when we hit our pain line that we tend to do as entrepreneurs. And I think that is just so, such a beautiful start to this whole thing that we actually have going on, but no one really talks about how we can mess things up.
Yeah. I mean, what's been fascinating for me, having coached thousands of entrepreneurs at different levels, I've seen these natural, what I call kind of growth ceilings of revenue and team structure and complexity, right? And usually what happens when people get to a place where growth equals pain, right? They decide to do one of three things. It's either, they call them the three S's. They either decide to sell the business because, you know, the promise that they sold themselves on is not materializing, right? They grew their business, they make less profit, more pain, more challenges. They're not, you know, they're not healthy, they're not sleeping well, et cetera. The other one is they sabotage their growth, meaning that they inadvertently make decisions to create ground cover for them to deal with problems to fail. It's a fascinating one. I mean, as simple as like not even replying to an email fast enough that you could, because you're not ready to grow and you sabotage yourself by missing out on the opportunity because of not replying fast enough. And then the fourth one is to stall, to decide, I don't want to grow. And the unfortunate part about entrepreneurs that get to that place, your customers' demand of a better service or product grows year over year. Nobody's ever said like, oh, I'm happy and I don't want any change or improvements on my service. No, that's never going to be the case. And then the hardest one is typically your best people. If you're in a happy spot today and you don't want to grow, the best people on your team, they're not going to stay at a place where there's no opportunity for, you know, expansion and growth, because most great people want to know that there's a future that's big enough for their dreams to fit inside of. And as a leader, that's our job to deliver that. So when people hit the pain line, they usually do one of those three things. And what I wanted to offer is a completely different approach, which is the buyback principle, to help people look at their calendar, get stuff off of their plate, and then fill it with things that light them up, that make them more money, so they can actually continue growing without creating a lot of pain in their life.
It's so easy to understand when you say it. I'm totally, in previous businesses, you know, guilty of sabotaging, not replying to emails, kind of going, can my team even handle any more clients? Is it going to break? Can I hire fast enough and train fast enough? And in with all those questions in my brain, I just didn't reply to emails. So it's totally something that we do. How can we pay more attention to when we hit the pain line? And then what do we need to do to like get over that pain line?
Yeah, I mean, the simple question I ask clients is, if I tripled your demand tomorrow, what would break? And usually in that, they know where the capacity is lacking. So here's the challenge is, if you know more growth is going to equal something breaking, then it's actually normal not to want to grow. So what I teach people is the process of the buyback loop, which is audit, transfer, fill. Look at your calendar through time and energy, right? The buyback principle states we don't hire people to grow our business. It's a capacity versus calendar problem. I argue that entrepreneurship is a calendar problem, because most entrepreneurs are capable of doing more. They just don't have the space to do it. So step one in the buyback loop is audit your calendar for time and energy, right? Identify the areas that suck your energy, that are low value tasks, then transfer those to somebody else, you know, contractors, automation, et cetera. We can talk about AI and leverage, because that's a huge opportunity. And then the third is fill it with either more work that you know you can get paid to do, right? You have demand that you haven't been able to deliver on. And or if that's been kind of, you know, you bought back that time even on the delivery side, then you got to fill it up with what I call the three components of the success ladder, which is, you know, skills, character traits, and beliefs, right? The worldviews, your beliefs around money. If you create the space in your calendar and thoughtfully every day, invest in your beliefs, invest in your skills, invest in your character traits to become the person who can achieve more. That's the process. And like Ronsley, what I love about entrepreneurship is that as much as we start it for the money, no person that's had any success in business hasn't fundamentally have to shift, change, adjust, work through, let go of a different, you know, belief system, skill set, or character traits. So I think entrepreneurship is the coolest thing, because it's a forcing function for us to become better. And we're rewarded with an unlimited, you know, pay scale if you want to keep climbing that ladder. So that to me is what makes this work I do exciting, is just helping people become a better version of them.
Love it. I love it. I love how you've been able to take some of the frameworks as well and put it into play and put it into action and make it useful for us. In the meantime, let's talk about artificial intelligence, because it's obviously taking over the world. We both have a software background, and it becomes kind of easy to talk about some of these things. When you're addressing some of the artificial intelligence questions, what are some of the things that are coming up that are not true? Like, what are some of the things that we're misunderstanding about artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've been studying this for close to a decade, back when it was like natural language processing, NLP. You know, I've been working on systems. And like, I've invested in 60 plus companies as a technology entrepreneur. So I've seen a lot of like, you know, even when GPT 3.5 came out and others since then, you know, there's been these leaps that happen, which is the industry we're in. A lot of people think it's going to like take over the world. So do I think it's going to take over the world? It has the potential to do that if it gets to the next level of intelligence. Things that I think people believe that are just not true is, you know, that it'll take their jobs. The truth is the jobs of the future, we're already seeing this, is that AI is a co-pilot in everything, right? Like even, I remember I was on a flight recently sitting next to a lawyer. This was probably 6 months ago. And I asked them, I said, do you use GPT for your work? And they're like, what's that? And I said, well, it's my, you know, it's the AI. It's, you know, it's ChatGPT. And they're like, oh, I kind of heard of this. It's like, I don't think it'll work for me. And I was like, why? And they go, well, you know, I do complex commercial leasing agreements. And I was like, fascinating. And I said, well, give me an agreement and some complexity, you know, and I pulled up my laptop and I'm on ChatGPT and I just plug in, you know, act as a lawyer, kind of gave it some prompt data and had asked it to create an agreement. And it started to write it. And the lawyer's eyes almost popped out of his head as he read what was being generated. He couldn't believe it. He even said, like, how does it know how to do that? And then he goes, how much does this cost? And I was like, it's free. It's not going to take people's jobs, but it's definitely going to make people that don't use AI look really inefficient. Like, it's one of those things where AI won't take your job, but people using AI will take your job. I mean, just recently, I was talking to a portfolio company I'm invested in, and they had a job placement for a new sales rep because, you know, I worked with them to build a new marketing function that started generating thousands of leads every month. They didn't have enough sales reps to actually field all the requests they were getting. I said, okay, we'll put a job posting. It looks like this. And they had no applicants. And I was like, show me your job application. And I looked at it. I go, well, come on. I mean, you're a startup. And this reads like, you know, IBM. So all we did is copied and pasted it on the call into GPT. And I said, act as a marketer and an HR professional, rewrite this using desirable language relevant to a new grad. And it wrote back the job placement as if it was like an 8.5 or 9 out of 10 copy, even the title. And then we say, okay, we'll write 5 variations of the job title to use maximum character 80. And it gave us like these 5 high quality job titles. And I'm like, try that. 3 weeks later, they had like 150 applicants. I just think it's a really cool place we're living in where we have a new tool that is providing so much productivity to teams if they use it right.
I'm going to talk about like how the different timelines have come around. And I want to get your thoughts on it because like I feel like the industrial age allowed us to commoditize industry and machines. And then from that, we built computers and then computers allowed us to create the information age, which commoditized information. I'm keen to hear what you think about for creative people. How can we start kind of auditing where we can use AI, and especially for people who don't know where to begin? Because I get this question more often than not. What would you say to those people who are already creative business owners? They're already founders. They have built their business to a certain point. And they're going, is this a fad? Should I get involved?
Yeah, well, the answer is it's definitely not a fad. It's gotten good enough that even if you don't build on top of it to create custom solutions within your business, what I highly recommend, if you do not have intelligence and AI incorporated into your solution, or at least how you do things in the back office, you're just not going to be as efficient. We literally do trainings for every department from finance to HR, not just marketing and sales, because those are well served, right? There's the tooling and the stuff. And even on the media side, they all use tools that are powered by AI today. But it's the other stuff that I think people miss out on. I mean, I'll give you a real example. The other day, I was doing a transaction and I had my lawyer and my finance team on an email. It was like a synopsis of a meeting they had, and it was just like long, right? So I literally just grabbed the whole thing, fed it into GPT and said, can you give me the questions I should be asking based on this email from my lawyer about this kind of transaction? It gave me 7 questions. I then took those questions, replied to the email, replied all, pasted the 7 questions. I said, do these sound like intelligent questions? Everybody replied and said, oh my gosh, that's incredible. Yes, these are the right questions. I said, fine. can we schedule a 15-minute phone call? I'll ask you the questions, you give me the answers, and I'll make the decision at the end. Like, it's just stuff like that that people aren't thinking creatively enough about how it could impact their work. Like, there's just no area of life where you're not synthesizing information that you're looking. So like the intelligence era, yes, but I almost look at it as like insights. Like what GPT does better than I could ever do is collect a bunch of information at scale. We're talking like large data sets, and then summarize and or identify the nuggets of insights within it for me to then make a decision. See, even in this age of AI, I think the most valuable asset is not one of technology, but the creativity to reimagine in what's possible, right? So it's like, it's not the technology, it's what problems can we now work on, consider solving that otherwise were not possible previously. You know, one of the things we built right when I saw 3.5, I reached out to my data scientist, Andrew, and we built DanGPT. Like I actually have my own ChatGPT for me. And right now it's being used by my whole coaching staff, my support team, my customer success team. But there's going to be a point as a coach where 80% of the questions will be answered, not by me, but by my personal co-pilot slash AI. And then what's cool is that that allows me to then reimagine, well, where's my value add as a coach? What is the specific insights that I'm providing somebody that doesn't need my time to give them forward progression in other areas of their business so that when I'm working with them, we're really moving the needle and leveraging my time the best? That's the kind of stuff that I think about.
Hey, it's Mick Hawes, host of The Toolshed. I love making my podcast, and that's primarily because Ronsley has helped me avoid a whole bunch of really basic mistakes that would have cost me a whole bunch of time, money, and energy. And Rons has compiled a list of these mistakes and how to avoid them, which is really a steal. You can get your copy where I downloaded mine at mistakes.wearepodcast.com. That is mistakes.wearepodcast.com. We Are Podcast. You can't find your voice if you don't use it.
When you were talking, some of the things that I was thinking about was how we've been using it. And it's very similar in the sense that I started with, we both know or used to know Kevin Hutto. And Kevin created this great framework called the Hydra Facebook audience method. So I took the training that him and Taki did and asked it to analyze it and then break it down, make it a prompt. And now I can put, or anyone, my team, my clients, this is who I am. So based on that, what we did was we created a Ronsley board with all the training that we had. And now the clients are going in, taking the training. And that is a game changer, especially for creatives trying to put their work out into the world, not knowing all the business elements. There's so many different elements that you could be the best chef on the planet. You could be the best lawyer on the planet. But if you don't have those business principles, it all fails. It doesn't become anything sustainable. Have you seen people thriving in this new world, or are most people kind of going, let's just wait to see how this develops?
Well, I mean, like the whole, I think it was Jeffrey Moore, the technology adoption curve, like the same thing's playing out right now, right? There's the early adopters like yourself and I that, you know, we're early, we're playing with it, we're creating content. And then there's the late majority and then the laggards, and there's the crossing of the chasm. So I think, to me, entrepreneurs who embrace AI today, they will essentially shape the narratives of tomorrow, right? And they'll be the authors, not the readers. I think the people that are on the sidelines, they're just going to end up reading what the innovators are doing. And all of us, you included, we're going to shape the future. So Ronsley, as you can imagine, like every program has like a teach and then a do. The do is typically like some kind of fill in the blanks to get a result or to analyze your situation. Well, this company looks at the worksheet as almost like the output of the prompts. So what they've done for different, you know, agency coaches, real estate coaches, and business coaches is they have a tooling that reverse engineers all of the worksheets into an initial prompt input. and it dynamically generates every output of the worksheets inside of the program. It literally scans the worksheets, reverse engineers them, figures out what's the common denominators for the inputs, prompts the 7 to 10 questions on the front end, and then takes care of what you could arguably say easily is 100 hours work of work, right? And I think that's just like the big idea. I think to the degree that whatever the output that we got to get to make a decision, if we can figure out how AI can help us get to that output on its own without us being involved based on either prompt engineering and or data sets, that's what we really want to do. Because that's what our minds are designed for, right? Is discovering the insights in the information, not having to correlate all this information and not provide anything new.
And it's so much a data. I mean, the things that AI are good at with memory and accuracy and, you know, keeping track of
this perfect information. It's bananas.
And we're not good at that. Like, we can't remember something that we had for dinner last night. And to be able to use that kind of technology is just so phenomenal.
Especially let me give you another example, Ronsley. When I was writing the book, Buy Back Your Time, people always ask me, like, how do you see AI helping with book writing? I definitely think that there is an art. You can use an AI today to write a book. Like, you can reverse engineer what it makes a good song. And Ed Sheeran's done a good job of saying it's these four chords and it's got this kind of structure, et cetera. And what I think is awesome is, like, I had it analyze my highlights to help me structure my book. Because I've read 500 books on productivity, time management, you know, leadership, that kind of stuff. And for it to go through all that information and then for it to extract the highlights, the insights, the quotes that made sense for the chapters once I had all those outlines. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I can always edit to create the magic after that. But to at least get the initial authoring of that, that's where AI shines.
It's so beautiful, especially when you have a framework. And it's just like, if you have the right framework as a creative, I mean, I remember when I first started out in business and I was like, oh, what? Someone asked me when I was just getting into online, I was like, oh, what are your customers' pain points? I'm like, I don't know. And it took me months to find out what their pain points and fears and then to create marketing copy from there. And now you can do it in seconds and minutes. And it's so easy. I have 7 people down in my tech team. And I was like, in the next tech meeting, I'm like, do I even need all 7 of you? And I feel like clients in general, entrepreneurs in general, whatever they've been stuck on, those could be the areas that AI could actually help them get unstuck so they can move on to their next idea or their next thing or whatever that is. Otherwise, we feel like we're going around in a circle without executing.
I mean, to me, this is like really fun because you're talking about, you know, a world that is near and dear to my heart, which is essentially, how do you scale a coaching company to 8 figures and beyond? All the coaches come to me now because I've done it in SaaS Academy and they asked me about this. And recently I held an event to kind of unpack that, but also how does AI change the coaching model, right? Yeah. Because here's what I've learned is, like, you can give somebody the answers to the test. You've seen it even with your work, but they still won't click the button, right? So it's like, for me, there's the current world of coaching and AI, which is, you know, the idea of co-pilots, right? Drafts and paths. Like, how do I get an initial draft or at least a direction to move forward? That AI does a good job. The other one is like wisdom and kind of like discovery. The future for me, as it pertains to like AI and coaching individuals, and this could be even like, right, if you're an executive in a company, how do you show up for your leaders better? I really think a big idea is the content side. So here's what I mean by that. When we have a world where we can do generative video, which we do now. We have a world where we have generative voice, which we have. Think about everything we currently have as a library that now all of a sudden the content can be generated by other people, okay? Meaning like the AI. So it's like the outline can be created by the AI and then the virtual version of me can actually be on camera. And it's not great today, but it's definitely clear that this will be great in the future. But I think actually the big idea is when all of a sudden you can do generative voice and you have translation, all of a sudden now you can take your whole library and start delivering and selling to new markets. And on top of that, you start thinking about licensing both ways, licensing your body of knowledge, right? The buyback principle in my case with my book, to other people's frameworks to other people, and or licensing bodies of work or IP from other people's programs into yours and then reshooting it or generating it through the AI, right? So, I mean, these are huge disruptors of what is meaningful pieces of work in a lot of content coaching programs. The other one for me is outputs, right? And that's where we talked about, you know, the everything the client has to do to then start working, that just gets taken care of, right? So, and I see a world where clients come in to my world, you know, in software world or business, and they connect their Xero account, they connect their Stripe account, they connect their CRM, and the AI literally gives them the 1, 2, 3 moves to double, triple their profit in the next 6 months. So then the question is, what remains the same, regardless if we have AI or not? This is where I call neural transformation, right? How do we coach neural transformation? Yeah. So I think the three areas that we need to focus on as leaders, as coaches, as authority figures is, one, the belief side, selling points of view, right? In many ways, all we do, even in your work as an AI kind of enthusiast, Ronsley, is we're trying to shift somebody's point of view around the technology. So one, how good can we get at selling, convincing, persuading somebody to shift their beliefs? Number two is giving them examples of possibilities, awareness of possibilities, which is what we're doing on this podcast, is literally showing people what the state of the art is today. And then the last one is the emotion side, right? It's the identity, it's the internal work, it's the self-worth. I think to the degree that we can coach and support people to elevate their internal emotions and beliefs around their self-worth, that will allow us to help them with a transformation. And that's why, as far as I'm aware, until, again, Neuralink gets built out with some AI models, beliefs, possibilities, and emotions are always going to be up for grabs as the limiting factor to an individual to perform at a higher level.
Beautiful. So in the spirit of AI, I put your bio in and I asked it to give me some questions that I should ask you before this conversation. So I believe collaboration is key. And I want to bring this back to your audience that are SaaS founders, B2B. So collaboration and partnerships are often, they often, you know, are huge parts of growth in any company. How do you suggest we, I mean, you can talk specifically to SaaS founders or founders in general, build strong relationships with partners and collaborators and joint ventures and allow us all to grow for mutual success?
Yeah, I mean, what I learned a long time ago from one of my mentors is that the pie is not fixed. Right? Like, and there's proof in just like gross domestic product or the economy, like every day, trillions of dollars exchange hands. Every day, the economies grow globally. We have not even come close to tapping out in regards to natural resources and or, you know, labor or whatever. Like the limiting factor in creation is creativity. To the degree that somebody can be creative about understanding a problem. And like, that's actually the hardest part, is like truly working on a problem and then coming up with creative solutions. The partnerships can happen. So for me, what I've always found to be the best is where my genius and somebody else's genius truly is synergy, right? I think those are always the biggest opportunities. Creating your own platform and then working with other people, sharing your platform with them to have their unique perspective shared with your audience and vice versa. I mean, if you can find, I've always said to people, if you can find 12 strategic partners, people that sell to the same customers, but don't compete directly with you, and these are people that have shared values and are talented. And again, you want to bet on people that have a bright future, because I think, you know, you want to hook yourself onto, you know, a rising tide, if you want to call it that, that in this space of AI, like, we're still in the early days. So there's people that don't believe that AI can do their job. And that's just because of the technology adoption curve. It's still not widely used and or known about. And I think, you know, to the degree you can partner with people to help get that message out there, I don't think there's a lack of opportunity.
Yeah. Dan, this was a little slice of heaven. Thank you for this conversation. Thank you for everything. Thank you for this book. Easily, the book by itself has helped me grow, helped my company grow, helped my team grow, helped us build some incredible processes. in Notion that I think you will totally drool over. But thank you for everything.
I appreciate it, Ronsley. Have an amazing day. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, bud.
Thank you so much for listening. Listen to the back catalog of over 300 episodes by going to wearepodcast.com. If you're looking for something specific, let the We Are Podcast team point you in the right direction. Send us an email on podcast@wearepodcast.com. Also, if you know a business owner who has a podcast, ask them to listen. Share an episode with them. The conversations here are going to save them lots of trial, error, time, and money. Until next week, much love.